Siempre Pa'lante presents The Aguacate Chronicles. Aguacate, dímelo. Aguacate, dímelo. Hola, mi gente. Welcome to The Aguacate Chronicles. I'm your host, Hirabo Luis Alvarez. Gracias for listening. We took a little break to get that exclusive content at New York Comic Con. It was everything and more. I even made the news thanks to the good people at CBS. Pa'lante shout out to Just Scope for the access and to all the amazing people I interviewed and connected with. Stay tuned for that fresh content. Now let's get into the second half of the Aguacate Chronicles. Last episode, Aguacate, Flan, y Plátanos came back with a vengeance. Team Arroz brought the black beans, bananas, and Vienna sausages to complete the takeover. Plenty of options to pick from to calm them hunger pains. Up next on the menu, we got ceviche, chile, mango salad, pineapple, cornbread, bistec de palomilla, and fish making their first appearance on the show. Aguacate, plátano maduro, verde, arroz, tostones, breaded steak, and frijoles negros return, making us even more hungrier than ever. These delicious foods get highlighted on audio clips featuring founder of the official Latino Film Festival, creative director, photographer, filmmaker, Danny Hastings, master blender of Uncle Nair's premium whiskey, Victoria Edie Butler, and former CEO and current board of director for Vicky Bakery, Alex Santiago. So cógelo con take it easy. There's enough to go around. Buen provecho. Enjoy the show. We have really gotten into some interesting conversations about some of these favorite dishes. And I feel that every time we come across some favorite dishes, Bernarda, the staples, plátano, plantains, rice, arroz, and a couple other things. Flan kind of made some appearances here and there. But this one is a special one. Mi hermano Danny Hastings, episode 11, Capturing and Celebrating Culture Through My Lens. He is an award-winning photographer, director. I mean, what doesn't he do? This Panameño has done more than 150, he shot more than 150 album covers. If you've heard of Wu-Tang, Enter the 36 Chambers, yeah, he did that album cover. If you've heard of Big Pun, yeah, Jay-Z, The Lox, Gangstar, House of Pain, on and on and on. And it's amazing to see our people in these fields and to know that we have someone who has been part of history for so long, as far as music and art and movies. And he also has the official Latino Film and Arts Festival he does every year. And it's dedicated to ensure the Latinx community is well represented in Hollywood. He's a creative director, filmmaker, and photographer. He does everything. I mean, he dabbles in so much. And currently, he's working on some amazing things with the Wu-Tang. And documenting their tours throughout the world. So check him out. And we're going to go into the clip, which I feel everyone's going to really enjoy.
Plátano maduro for sure. Panameños, bro, we're like Dominicans, bro. Like, plátano maduro tiene que estar ahí. O plátano verde too. I'm a beaner, bro. I eat beans all day, every day. You know what I'm saying? I'm a bean connoisseur too, bro. Like, I can actually put that on a crock pot and all kinds of beans. I just make like chili and like I'm addicted to beans. So beans and plátano maduro for sure. I've been laying down the rice, bro. The rice is not as good as you think it is for you, especially as you get older. Too much rice can become sugar. So, but growing up, that was arroz con frijoles, plátano maduro y carne, bro. That was it. Aguacate was definitely part of it. We had a palo de aguacate right in the backyard. So big ones. The Mexicans have the Haas avocado, like smaller ones, which are very flavorful. But we're used to that big joint. They look like a papaya, man. These avocados are like brolic. You know, they taste like butter, bro. For real. That was part of my favorite fruit is piña, bro. Anything piña. Dulce piña, bro. That's, I mean, I'm from Panama, so. Y mango, bro. Mango, oof. I could eat mango like verde, mango maduro. Like, I don't know if you used to do that in Cuba, but like, cuando estaba verde, tú lo cortas y haces una ensalada con vinagre, salt and pepper. Yo. As an adult, my shit is ceviche, bro. Ceviche, bro. I can kill ceviche. There's no wrong time for ceviche. I could wake up to eat ceviche, bro.
Renata. We got a selection here. I mean, yes, I was taking notes on every single one, obviously, you know, as we look through it to keep track. But Danny just laid it out. I mean, he went from plátano maduro all the way to ceviche and everything in between.
Now, the mango salad that he described, that is perfect. We used to do something similar. Green mango with a little bit of salt. It's crunchy. You know, there is just a little bit of sweetness and it's a little pucker. It's nice. And the piña too. The piña, it's funny. The pineapple, we eat a lot of meat in Brazil. So we use the pineapple, a roasted or grilled pineapple. Cinnamon, sugar, sometimes a little bit of cachaça, or sometimes some alcohol to it, just to cut that fatness or you know, the heaviness of the meat. Perfect. I totally understand why it's coming from with the piña and the mango and ceviche. Ceviche is, it's refreshing. It's summertime. You know, like now it's the perfect time. It's cool. It is delicious. Simple. I like it. I like the way he thinks. I like his picks. I'm right there with him.
Yeah. I mean, they're all amazing choices. There's no right or wrong here. I mean, this is what people enjoy and consider their favorites, their go-tos. And plátano, once again, a heavy favorite.
Yeah, the basics again.
Yeah, the beans. You want to talk about arroz. Now, I like what he said about that. You know, rice is amazing, but you got to be careful, right? We've talked about health. With rice, too much rice. But, I mean, a little portion.
Yeah, a spoon in there.
Uh-huh.
You can't just to be present, you know.
That's right. And, you know, I love his description of the avocados. I couldn't stop laughing because there is those different types. And I did a little bit more research and just finding out there's more than 500 varieties of aguacate in the world. I mean, and we usually just see the fuerte, the Haas, but also the South Florida, like the South Florida, those bigger ones, the ones he was describing, they're buttery. And I've actually made guacamole with the more buttery style aguacate, the bigger ones. And it tastes different. It hits different. It tastes different because it's not as thick. I almost feel like those small avocados, they give you that a little bit more thicker texture, but the buttery one's a little bit more smoother. But yeah, it was interesting. Like I went down this rabbit hole and there's like different types or the varieties. There's the reed, the gem, the Haas, and West Indian. And West Indian is like the sweetest flavor. And man, I need to drink a little bit of cafecito. the Haas, yeah, I'm like, oh my goodness. Haas is the higher in fat and richer taste, a smoother texture. The gem is the most expensive variety with the creamy texture and delicious taste. And then the reed is considered by some to be the best-selling variety with a rich, nutty flavor, which, yeah, it was... And there's so much more information out there. I got some more to share throughout our conversations, but it's pretty interesting. And it's a descendant, the Haas, this was a really cool thing, is a descendant of Mexican and Guatemalan seedlings. It's very interesting. And they're hybrids. You know, so as people travel around the world, you know, they encounter these different foods and then they bring them to other countries and they raise, you know, they plant them in their soil and things come up. Yeah, Mexican, Guatemalan, and Indian. Those are kind of the three groups.
Yeah, back in the day in California, when Haas first started being popular in the U.S., they used to have a variety very similar to fat content, and it was just a different shape. It was round and had a little neck, like a longer neck. But because of the odd shape, I guess it wasn't easier to transport and sell it. So they tried to migrate back only for the Haas because of the size and logistics wise. But I've seen it out there. It's kind of cool. It still exists, of course, but not that popular as we have the Haas today, which is probably my favorite. Granted, I had the big ones back in Brazil. Those are more common, more popular there. But the creaminess and richness of the Haas avocado wins for me. That is it.
That's it. That's it. And a little aguacate with ceviche, mango salad. Yeah, a little aguacate to that. I mean, especially a ceviche. Oh, man, we can do a whole 10-part series and travel to different places, Renata, on ceviche. Ceviche in itself. Let's table that. Let's table that. Let's table that. Let's table that definitely.
To all my potential sponsors, here's another opportunity for This Was Brought to You By. Insert your brand name here. Did you know ceviche's roots date back nearly 2,000 years to the Pacific coast of Peru, where the Moche civilization used tumbo, a local passion fruit juice, to marinate fish. Coastal civilizations of Peru also prepared fish with pepper and salt, adding to the dish's rich history. In the Andes Mountains, the Incas enjoyed a variation of ceviche marinated with chicha, a fermented corn beverage. Significant changes came with the Spanish arrival some 400 years ago, introducing Mediterranean ingredients like lime and cilantro. This replaced the traditional tumbo or chicha, making fresh cilantro the popular topping. The Japanese later added their take to the dish, maintaining the same ingredients but altering the method. Before, the fish was cooked in the juices for hours. Now the fish is cut and served fresh, similar to dishes like sashimi and sushi. This Japanese-inspired method is now common in Peru. So next time you're enjoying fresh ceviche, thank the good people of Peru for giving us this comfort food that can be enjoyed anywhere in the world, any time of the day. Gracias, Peru. Now back to the show.
Moving along, we have episode 13, Love, Honor, and Respect, featuring Victoria Edie Butler. She is the master blender for Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey. She's part of the team that's the most awarded American whiskey or bourbon since its launch in 2017. She is the great-great-granddaughter of Nearest Green. And as a master blender for Uncle Nearest, she's reshaped the whiskey and bourbon industry and has won countless awards. Uncle Nearest is exceeding sales of $100 million, has exceeded, and is on pace to more than double revenue by the end of 2023. This African-American woman, this Black woman, strong Black woman, has changed the game. And I am so happy and honored that I got to interview her. She's amazing, so humble. The conversation, I want to share more here and talk about it, but I want everyone else to listen, right? I want the listeners, the people that have gotten a chance to listen, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, check it out. And, you know, if you have it, just listen to it again. You might catch some gems you missed. But she, just her soul, her spirit, she deserves everything and more. And she is the first African-American Black woman master blender in the whiskey industry, really changing the game. And a little fun fact, Nearest Green was the slave who taught Jack Daniels how to make whiskey. That's a story in itself that I encourage and I recommend everyone read because it's beautiful what the CEO, Fawn Weaver, big shout out to Fawn and her team, have done to create this movement and to honor the legacy and to bring this full circle. And it's just continuing to grow. I've tried all their flavors. My goodness. Yes. I'm going to play the clip and then we're going to talk some more. But this was a special episode, as all of them are, but I've learned so much.
At my grandmother's house, there was never a meal except breakfast. She made homemade biscuits, but there was cornbread for everything. Every meal. And she made the best tasting and the prettiest pan of cornbread. Of course, it was made in a cast iron skillet. She was the absolute best cook. But that cornbread, phenomenal. Everything with her was from scratch. There were no recipes and no shortcuts. She was just a phenomenal cook.
This hit home. This hit home because I know we spoke about Abuelita before. And let's get your take on this, because cornbread.
It's another classic for us, too. Cornbread, we call it broa. Broa, the butter, a little pieces of, cheese, because we are from Minas Gerais, so we put cheese on everything. But the way that she was describing, beautifully made in a cast iron. That is the classic. You can even, if you close your eyes and just listen to the description of it, you can smell it. You can have that scent and you can see it. You can just visualize it. It is a classic and it's so fulfilling, easy to make, accessible. So I guess that's why it was so popular to make. And it is hearty. You know, you're going to get filled up. You're going to feel full and satisfied. So yeah, definitely a major, major classic back there for us as well.
And I heard how she was talking, describing as homemade and cast iron skillet. That in itself, you can just start visualizing her grandmother making her abuelita, but then the smells. Because we know the smells of the kitchen, it's not just the final product. It's the process and the different smells that come out of the seasoning, putting things on the pan, letting it simmer. And you know this.
The butterness of it, because it's usually loaded with the sweetness of the corn when it's cooked. You have that very specific scent. It is delicious. It is. I can visualize it. I can close my eyes and see it, what she was describing.
Yeah. And cornbread pairs with everything, mi gente, everything from a cafecito to a nice glass, about two fingers, with an ice cube of whiskey. Uncle Nearest whiskey, by the way. Uncle Nearest whiskey. It's something, Renata, if you haven't tried, I strongly recommend. Actually, next time we meet up, I'm bringing a bottle. You have to try this whiskey. It's just right. There's nothing wrong with this. It's like, I swear they've really prayed to the ancestors. I'm sure they do. They just got the formula. The formula is so wow. When things are done right,
I'm gonna have to try that.
and it's just right because it's not a whiskey. There's different drinks you have. I've had a long week and you have a drink and that's it. This is not just having the drink. It's an experience. It really is a very well-made whiskey. And then the history behind it. Have you heard of Uncle Nearest?
I'm not that familiar with whiskey, to be honest with you. I might be a lightweight when it comes to that, but I do appreciate sometimes a good whiskey, very here and there kind of thing. But yes, I can see it. But I'm not familiar with them, no.
No, we're gonna make sure that that happens. So Fawn and Victoria, see, I every chance I get, I got to put people on to Uncle Nearest because you are doing some amazing things. God bless you and your team. It's just amazing. And I'm glad that I had the honor to interview Victoria. Fawn, you're going to be up next. I'm definitely going to be reaching out to the team. We got to get that interview going. But thank you. Cornbread, mi gente. Get your recipes and definitely ask your abuelito, ask your family about recipes. That's something that I wanted to bring up real quick. We have such a rich history within our families we don't even know about because we don't ask or we don't document it. And that's the key. And I know we have that, everyone can relate to the infamous cook in the family, right? That does everything from the top of their head. You can still document the ingredients and play with the ingredients, like as long as you have that list, right? Correct? Renata, I mean, have you done that? Like just document it, because it's tough when they tell you a little bit of here. Un poquito aquí. Yeah, it's tough to know exactly what to put in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is a cultural thing to have those old books, like you said, your grandmother's book of recipes. I've seen it, some beautiful stories of some really cool chefs that have actually used that as a source of inspiration. There is a particular chef, she's Brazilian too. She lives in New York, and she has a few shows on Food Network and also back in Brazil. She has a beautiful book, and she talks about this in some of one of her episodes. And about having the little book of recipe. There's a romantic thing to it. It's not only keeping history, you know, having that emotional memory back there of the scents, of the smells, of the flavors, but you're keeping up with some probably very unique classic way to do things that tends to get lost. So it is a very beautiful homage to heritage, to history, try to keep that. It is a beautiful thing.
Yes, and we honor our ancestors in doing so. Don't wait till, you know, your loved one is on to the next life. Take advantage now. Very important to ask those questions.
Hi guys, this is Renata Sampaio. You're listening to Siempre Parlante con my dear friend, Geraldo Alvare.
From whiskey, and we talked a little bit about whiskey and some cornbread, to one of the most well-known bakeries in South Florida and in the world, because I feel if you've been to Vicky Bakery, but as my cousin Leticia says, Vicky Bakery in South Florida, they are taking over. I mean, it's amazing. And I've had the honor to interview their former CEO. He's still on the board, but at the time he was CEO, Alex Santiago. This man, I mean, his story in itself was really cool. He's been with Vicky Bakery for more than 30 years. And he's built on this family legacy that began in Cuba more than 50 years ago. And as I said, one pastelito at a time, the immigrant story is all about the American dream, el sueño americano. He shares this journey of becoming part of the family. And he married the daughter of the mom and dad that built this empire. And from pastelitos, to cangrejitos, I mean, cafecitos. You walk into a Vicky Bakery, and if you haven't, I'm not, it's just an experience in itself. You just can't have one thing. Like when they say you walk into a Walmart or a Target, you're going in for one thing and you'll come out with 10 things. The episode was titled El Sueño Americano, The American Dream. Qué sweet it is, featuring Alex Santiago. Yeah, really, really cool story. And it resonated home being Cuban when he was sharing the story and how he's helped add on to the legacy. Let's hear the clip.
El arroz blanco. Bistec de palomilla con arroz blanco. Hígado con arroz blanco. Pescado con arroz blanco. El bistec de milanesa con arroz blanco. No era cena si no había arroz blanco. Los tostones, plátano maduro. There was always some combination of plantain, pero el arroz blanco no faltaba. Even if it was just arroz blanco con frijoles negros. Hey, we're in a hurry today. Mom got home late. Dale, arroz blanco y frijoles negros de él. That's our aguacate, el arroz blanco.
Classic.
Right?
Just classic. You got the plate out of the kitchen. He comes with frijoles and white rice. That's it. Then you build on it.
We can all relate. And I think this is throughout all cultures. Let's not just talk about the Latino culture, Latin America. I feel that those quick to make, in a sense, but really good, you know, a good big pot, caldero of black beans, frijoles, and a big pot of rice, that's a couple days.
Well, not only that, I do have a little trouble with new ways to make white rice, okay? I know they have those machines now. It's very easy, apparently, but I think it takes away of the process a little bit. It's a little bit soulless, let's put it this way. Just put in a pot and put the timer. No, come on. You have, well, the way that I learned it, you have to go back twice. Now I think a little bit different, disagreeing with my grandmother a little bit here and there. That was a topic for discussion, how to make the perfect white rice. But the classic way still, I think, is the best way to do it. So I'm a little against the modernization of the white rice, even though it's very convenient, granted, okay? And, you know, Asia, they use it a lot. You know, it's very, very big in Asia cultures too. And it came this way to make it a little bit more practical. I'm a little resistant, okay? I'm just going to say it. Let's keep it with the classics.
Yeah, it's the taste, the flavor, definitely.
But it's a whole experience. It's not only how it tastes, it's how it's prepared. You have to wash the rice. You have to get your oil and the garlic going. And then you're going to not burn it, but toast it a little bit, the grains. There's a whole process involved. So you can't just put it in a pot and press the minutes. No. That's my two cents on it.
It is true. And I know I threw everybody for a curveball. Le tiré una curva a todo el mundo because everybody probably thought we were going to talk about bakery, like items and like anything in the bakery, all things bakería. But it's interesting because when you're so used to a certain type of food, if that's your business, right? Let's take a step back. And you can relate to this. Being a chef, catering, doing private events. The last thing you want to see is the food you made. You want to try something different because you're constantly, you know, doing the little tastes, doing the little, and it just, you don't want that. And I remember talking to my good friend, Chef Gus, the Hudson chef. Check out Cubita Cafe when you get a chance, mi gente. Miami might have Sandwich de Miami, they might have Vicky Bakery, but up here in Jersey, in Nutley, New Jersey, we got Cubita Cafe. And Hudson Chef, Chef Gus, we were talking about that. And the last thing, he's like, you know, I just want something, you know, I'll go to a Shake Shack and a good burger. I need a break, which is interesting because I think a lot of people feel like, oh, you make this, you must love this dish. And it's not that you don't like it. It's that you're constantly making it. And you need change of pace. Can you relate to that?
Oh, yeah. I can see that. And the biggest shock to me was when I first came here to New York, New Jersey area, because of the variety. Back home, we were just used to have the basics always, and we're going to have some variations, but the rice and beans was always there. You know, certain items were always there. And then you come here and then you have the opportunity to experience something completely different. And we're going to go to a Thai place and get like a coconut soup. Like what? I mean, the ingredients are familiar to me, but I never seen put it that way, put it together that way. So it was brilliant to me. I mean, every chance that I had, I would try something different, not only because I wanted to learn about a different culture, different way to do things, but also to take a break. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I know my tempero. I know how it's going to taste. I know exactly the scents that are going to be filling my house with. And yes, I need a break sometimes. I can relate to that too. Yeah. But we're spoiled up here. We have a lot of options over here.
Oh my goodness. Like we were talking about el café, the coffee. Today you wake up and you're like, well, I want to try this kind of coffee. You go online, you ordered it in a couple of days. You know, next day, heck, it's there. It's in front of your doorstep and you're trying that. And I feel that's the way with a lot of the things we have now, with the beauty of the internet and just commerce, e-commerce. It's insane. And I love how Alex, he's talking about rice pears. Yeah, it pairs with everything. Bistec de palomilla, Cuban steak with onions, pescado, fish, bistec de milanesa, fried bread steak, tostones, plátano maduro, frijoles negros, on and on. All these things pairs with rice. So it's interesting. It's very interesting. But so far, what we've been hearing, right, we're hearing a lot of plátano maduro, rice, aguacate is trying to make a comeback here. Interesting, the Aguacate Chronicles, we've heard aguacate here and there. But again, it's not just about aguacate, mi gente. It's about that aguacate moment, that food that really is a staple and takes you back.
Mi gente, I'm about to make some ceviche with a little mango and aguacate on the side. Can't forget the maduros. I need this in my life right now, for real. You know what else I need? I need you to show your love and support after you listen. Rate, review, follow, like, subscribe, and share. You can find the show on every major podcast platform. Keep the feedback coming via the comment section, email, and DMs. Share your favorite recipe while you're at it. You know I love to hear from you. Special thanks to Danny Hastings, Victoria Edie Butler, Alex Santiago, my co-host Renata Sampaio, Santiago Ramones on the edit, and DJ Andre Jones for your support on the intro. Tune in next week for more mouth-watering treats. And remember, it's all about the aguacate. Dímelo.